You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Hey, this is Aaron, Todd's producer. Thanks for tuning in for this weekend's Best of the Todd Albaugh Show. On Friday's show, we were joined by Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski. Next year's governor's race might be a long way off, but Secretary Godlewski has already announced her bid to run for lieutenant governor.
Is indeed a political rising star. She is the current Secretary of State for the state of Wisconsin, and she is the first person to announce that she is running for lieutenant governor of the state on the Democratic side. Sarah Godlewski joins us via StreamYard from her home. Madam Secretary, thanks for taking the time and a great taste of tunes.
Well, thanks, Todd. I will tell you, when you're playing that song, it was hard for me not want to, you know, jam out.
Right? So, especially on a Friday.
I'll take with Mac anytime. Exactly. I think that's what people want Friday at 2:30. So.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I don't want anything too heavy. Now, I have realized something as we've come on the air, and for our people watching on Facebook, StreamYard, YouTube, and the like on the video side, this is not a direct endorsement, mind you. However, I am wearing green and gold today, which happens to be the colors, the campaign colors for Secretary Godlewski. I have my Packer polo shirt on because the Packers play the Seahawks tomorrow in the last preseason game. But I know, Secretary Godlewski, that our friend Trygve Olsen, political strategist, would love this because he is a Packer owner like so many are, and he loves green and gold. Is that why you've kind of that's kind of your mantra with campaign colors, green and gold?
Well, it's a good question. And as a Packer shareholder, that's near and dear to my heart.
Very good.
But also the colors really started from my first campaign, which was for state treasurer. Mm-hmm. And I was like, green, money, Packers, green. I mean, I'm like, it checks so many things about why Wisconsin is Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So.
No, I think it's great. I think it's a good through line. And as we talk about so often, I know you know this from traveling around, being a statewide elected official, so many of the people, they're not wearing red hats or blue hats. They're more interested in green and gold hats. And that's what brings Wisconsinites together.
Well, I think we can always say the Packers unify the entire battleground state. So, right. Which is a good thing. And football is a good thing to be unified around.
100%. We appreciate coming back on the show. I know it's been a while since you've been on. So perhaps for people who haven't heard you on this program before, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and kind of what inspired you to get into elected office.
Of course. So I'm a fifth generation Western Wisconsinite and a product of a union family. My parents are now two retired school teachers in the Chippewa Valley. And something that, you know, they would always talk about with my sisters and I is they would say, you know, service. And when you see something wrong, you've got to stand up and do something about it. And so I've tried to really kind of live that family motto. I actually started my career in national security. And Todd, you can imagine a 20-something year old walking into the Pentagon. I think I would maybe last a few years. I was there for almost a decade and kind of did various things, not just national security, but then supporting small businesses and local government, which eventually led me to this unique project where I found out that Scott Walker was trying to get rid of the state treasurer's office, Todd. And I'm like, I don't know. This just seems a little suspicious. Like, why would we get rid of our chief financial officer? I'm like, we would be the only state to basically not have a chief financial officer. And in talking to folks, they're like, Sarah, there's nothing you can do about it. It's going to be on the ballot. Like, it's a done deal. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I remember I actually went to the National Association of Secretaries or Treasurers and learned about all the work that they can do for their states and came home to my husband. And I'm like, well, I'm going to run a constitutional amendment committee to save the state treasurer. And he's like, God bless you, Sarah. Call me when it's over. And yeah, we like created this bipartisan committee and we stopped Scott Walker's power grab with a significant majority. And then after that, the question was, well, who's going to run for the seat? And I'm like, well, I've been, you know, supporting small businesses. I've managed big budgets. So I stepped up and ran. And in 2018, I actually flipped 9 Trump counties. And so that was really my start into politics. I guess one could say it was maybe not a typical straight line. It was maybe a bit dorky. But it was really, to me, always about service and what we need to be doing, to ensure Wisconsin is, you know, the best state.
Yeah. I call you a rising political star because I truly believe that. I mean, you're elected officials. So, I mean, you're early 40s. I mean, you're a fairly young person in political terms, especially when you look at, you know, people running for president or octogenarians these days. but you've gone from unelected to state treasurer to putting up a really good fight in a U.S. Senate race to then becoming the Secretary of State. And you're not even 50 yet. And here you are now running for lieutenant governor. And what I hear back feedback from you on people that I talk to around the state is she's just like a normal person. And you're someone who listens and is can have a conversation. And you seem to relate to Wisconsinites all across the state. And that to me has kind of been your calling card. What do you attribute to your political success to date?
I honestly contribute it to my family. I mean, my parents are public school teachers, and at a very early age, they would really incorporate me into their work. So my dad taught adults, Todd, and they would help them get their GEDs. And these adult students, sometimes they wouldn't show up to class because they couldn't find affordable childcare to help them. Mm-hmm. And so as a kid, I would go and help babysit. Or my mom was a early childhood speech therapist. And so I would like spend time in her classrooms, doing what I could, or, you know, like running a food bank, but at the same time, you know, like my dad would take me fishing and camping and enjoying the outdoors. Or, you know, he had 3 girls and, you know, so like, that's what we did, is we would watch Sunday football as a family. So I think to me, it's just what everyday Wisconsinites or Wisconsin families are doing, and why this is like all a part of things that make our state so great.
Hey, you keep it real. I love that about you. So now you're Secretary of State. And I know that, again, I was in the Capitol working on the Republican side. And for listeners of the show, they know I left the party in 2011. But my former party did a lot to basically neuter that office. So yep. Now that you were appointed there after former Secretary of State Doug La Follette stepped down, the governor appointed you to this position. What have you done with it, given the fact that you're not given a whole lot of power in that position?
Well, let me walk you first into my first day, Todd. So for starters, I was told I was going to start on Friday, but nobody told me what time. And so I got a knock on my door early that morning, and it was the chief counsel for the governor to swear me into office. So I took my oath of office in my Packer pajamas in my kitchen. So that's how I started this job. And then when I walked into the office, it was something that I had never thought I would see in government. There were files all over the place, and there was this backlog of cases that Wisconsin families who were looking for adoption or business expansion needed to be approved, or they had this relic that I was like, this is a really nice antique. And they're like, no, that's the state seal. And I'm like, and we use this still? And they're like, yeah, thousands of documents still get sealed with this. Yeah. And so to your point, Todd, it was just a very clear reality about how this was a power grab by the Republicans to do everything they could to remove these checks and balances. But as somebody who is pretty scrappy, you know, like my parents nickname me sometimes Scrappy Sarah. I'm always trying to figure things out like this. Mm-hmm. is we were able to really improve access to services. So we reduced wait times. It was like over a month to less than a few days. We digitized thousands of records. So we really worked hard to improve transparency with the office. We transitioned the services, which, you know, Todd, to get services from you, you'd have to come in person, which I would love to see you in Madison.
You're always welcome.
You know, but that's not realistic for folks in Green Bay or Superior to drive hours to get services. So we recently were able to transition a lot of our services online, because to me, this might not be like the sexy stuff, Todd, that like gets everybody, you know, woo, excited about, but it's what matters. I mean, people want government to be there for them. And so access to services and being reliable and something that you can always count on, to me, is probably what I'm most proud of in with regard to the work that we have done in the Secretary of State's office.
I'm just glad that you've updated things digitally, because people who knew, like I did, former Secretary of State Doug La Follette, he believed in delivering things by dog sled. He would put on that big cap and go around. I'm just joking around. But we're talking to Sarah Godlewski, the current Secretary of State of Wisconsin. She is running for the Lieutenant Governorship of the state of Wisconsin. Madam Secretary, why do you want to be Lieutenant Governor?
Well, it's funny, Todd, you asked this question, because when I shared it with my sisters, they're like, okay, Sarah, so you will have been the state treasurer, the secretary of state, and then the lieutenant governor. Are you trying to fill some sort of Wisconsin bingo card that we don't know about? And, you know, for me, after I heard that Governor Evers was not going to run for reelection, I really just had to like think through what's the best way I can serve Wisconsin. Because for me, these roles, whether it's state treasurer or secretary of state, has always been about service. And in traveling the state, Todd, I mean, folks are really fed up. They're fed up because they're seeing communities that are being taken over by Wall Street and not being run by Main Street, or, you know, nurses are being priced out of the neighborhoods in which they serve and they can't even afford to live there. Teachers are getting two jobs because they can't stay afloat. And so in kind of thinking through this, I feel like the best role for me now that would really allow me to be a part of the leadership team to help tackle some of these complex problems is as lieutenant governor, because let's face it, it's not just one person who's going to help solve healthcare for Wisconsin or the PFAS crisis in the state. It's going to be a group of people, and I want to really be a part of that leadership to roll up my sleeves and get these things done.
About 2 minutes before the first break, and we'll come back and pick it up. But what do you say to your, I don't want to call them detractors, they're just questioners out there. Some people are, you know, they're saying, why is she doing this? She's in her early 40s, politically very young, pretty fast rise through all the, why is she going for lieutenant? Why does she just stay in the Secretary of State office for kind of another cycle and then move up to something else? Why try to move up to the lieutenant governorship right now?
Yeah. So for me, I believe the lieutenant government role is the best way I can serve the state. And while I was honored that the governor appointed me to the Secretary of State role, and I believe we've done good work, I really am excited about a whole host of other issues that I can really address as lieutenant governor. And part of that, for example, is economic security. I mean, the fact that as I was sharing, I was down in Kenosha not too long ago, and a single mom was sharing with me all the different jobs she has just to be able to feed her family. And that's not the Wisconsin that I want my kid to grow up in. Like, Wisconsin, I believe, is the best place to live, work, and raise a family. But we've got to make sure it's even better for the next generation.
Less than a minute, if you can. Why not just run for governor? You got the credentials for it.
Well, that's very kind, Todd. But I will say, I think, like, for me, honestly, the lieutenant governor role is the best role at this moment. I have been about building coalitions. When I was state treasurer, we built this home ownership coalition that helped prevent foreclosures and expanded home ownership. And I really feel at this moment like that is the best way that I can help make a difference.
Sarah Godlewski, current Wisconsin Secretary of State, running for Lieutenant Governor. She announced on Mornings of Pat Kreitlow yesterday. Give credit to Pat for that get. Who does she like, though? Who's her favorite to be governor? Because she doesn't get a choice. We're going to find out on the other side. Don't go anywhere. It's Sarah Godlewski, Todd, on Civic Media's Ready Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 8 minutes before the hour of 3 o'clock. Glad to have you along. Going to continue our conversation with Secretary of State Sarah Galuski in just a moment. But don't forget, we are right in the middle of Free Ticket Friday, your chance to win 4 tickets to the club level of AmFam Field to see the red hot Milwaukee Brewers right now. This is for a very specific game. You cannot exchange it for a different date. It's for Thursday, August 28th. In the afternoon, so you have to be able to go on a Thursday afternoon at 1:10, Thursday, August 28th versus Arizona at 1:10. Go to the Civic Media app right now and text the word WIN, W-I-N. Text the word WIN, W-I-N, to be eligible at the end of the 4 o'clock hour. At 4 o'clock, I should say, the computer will randomly draw someone, and you will be on your way to that Milwaukee Brewers game, you and 3 lucky friends. Our guest this half hour certainly hopes that she wins. But I messed it up.
I do.
Because the word text is not plural. It's singular. W-I-N.
She's looking for a win.
She's there. Thank you, Zombers. The Secretary of State, Sarah Galuski, looking for a win in her latest race. She announced on Pat Kreitlow's show, Mornings of Pat Kreitlow, she is going to run for Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. All right, Secretary Galuski, this is, to the outsiders, it's a weird political office because, unlike the president and vice president, the gubernatorial nominee does not choose their lieutenant gubernatorial running mate. The voters do in partisan primaries. So, and we've seen this before as a former Republican. One of the secrets is that Tommy Thompson did not want Scott McCallum to be his lieutenant governor, and he got stuck with him for 16 years. And it was not pleasant at all. Former Governor Scott Walker wanted moderate Mike Powers from Greene County to be his running mate, and he got stuck with Clocks and Tables Clayfish. And it was not a real fun time for them at all. So tell me, Secretary Galuski, who is your favorite to win the Democratic primary for governor? Who do you want to run with?
Oh my gosh, Todd, I feel like I'm a parent right now and you're asking me who my favorite kids are. You know, like these are just things you just don't do. But look, I will say for me, and I am really excited about the people who have gotten in this race and about the folks that are rumored to get in this race. I mean, we've got a really good bench as Democrats. And I think that's one thing that I feel really confident about is that we're going to have, regardless of who makes it out of this primary, we're going to have a really great governor. And of course, a lieutenant governor that are going to be best positioned to serve Wisconsin.
I have a lot of thoughts on it. We've had a couple of women who have been lieutenant governor. The first one was a former senator from the Waukesha area. Margaret Farrow was the first woman to be a lieutenant governor on the Republican side. And then she was the running mate of or put in there by Scott McCallum when he became governor after Tommy Thompson left to serve the Bush administration. And then you had Barbara Lawton serve as lieutenant governor under former Democratic Governor Jim Doyle. We've never had a woman governor in this state. How about, wouldn't it be great if you had, how about this deal? Sarah and Sarah. You have Sarah Rodriguez as governor, Sarah Galuski as two Sarahs at the top, or you could have Kelda Royce and Sarah Gal, two women, both. I mean, how about that? That'd be a great deal, I think, for historically.
Well, it reminds me of what my grandma used to talk about, Todd. She was from St. Croix County and lived in Polk County, but she would always say, Sarah, when you want someone to talk about something, you ask a guy. But if you want actually to get something done, you ask a woman. Right. And so I think that there is some truth with what Grandma Leadholm would tell me as a kid when we think about, just looking at how to get things done, which I think are important in public service.
Before we run out of time, I want to make sure we get at your socials here. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it's sarah4wisconsin.com.
Yep, it's Sarah4WI, but the email is sarah4wisconsin.com. Yep.
So and your Sarah is with an H, right? There's a S-A-R-A-H 4FORWI.com. So Sarah4WI.com.
Close. Sarah4Wisconsin.com. You guys were close.
Sorry. But the socials are Sarah4WI. Got it. But the actual website is Sarah4Wisconsin spelled out .com. Your comms people will not be happy with me. I apologize. That's on me. But no, because I let me ask you this. Why announce now? We're not even Labor Day a year out. Some people are going to say, hey, you could have waited till after the first of the year. To your point, Lieutenant Governor is not the most politically sexy race out there. So why do it now?
Yeah, I mean, look, I had been making my calls and traveling the state and talking to people and asking for their opinion. Like, do you think that I would be good? And or do you have any thoughts for me? And when after my last call, which ended up being my 27th legislative endorsement, I'm like, let's just go. I mean, the fact that I have received 27 legislative endorsements and just talking to people about, do you think that I would be good in this role? You know my record. You've seen me work. And to me, it was like, you don't just need to be talking about it. It's pretty clear. So let's just start doing it.
Well, for a political operative guy, I think it's smart to clear the field. I mean, if you get all the main endorsements and everything now, I mean, I would think that not be too many Democrats are going to want to go up against you. You're a statewide office holder, great name recognition with a lot of endorsements. I would think that will help clear the field for you.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think we have seen a lot of energy from this campaign. The fact after I announced, whether it is from legislative endorsements to fundraising, the money that's coming in, to folks reaching out across the state that are like, how we can help. We want to continue to build from this really positive and exciting momentum.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Again, it's Sarah with an H, S-A-R-A-H, 4, Wisconsin spelled out .com. You can find out more information. Our current Secretary of State, hoping to be our next Lieutenant Governor. Madam Secretary, thank you very much. I appreciate you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Todd, and thanks to all your listeners as well.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Again, Sarah4Wisconsin.com. You can find out all those types of information, all the background, all the history, and more on our Secretary of State and maybe future governor, Lieutenant Governor of the state of Wisconsin. Come on back.
Up next, we go back to Monday's show in an interview with Evan Feinauer from Clean Wisconsin.
Truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network 35, now past the hour of 3 o'clock on this Monday, August 18th, 2025. Glad to have you along. Zommer's on the board. Could give you an update over the air on many of our stations across the Civic Media Radio Network on the Brewers Radio Network. Brewers kicking off an important, critical 5-game series against the Cubs in Chicago this afternoon. Can tell you the top of the 8th inning, Brewers 3, Cubs nothing. How about that? Hopefully the Brewers can hang on. Would go up to 9 games lead on the Brewers in the NL Central. If they can do that, can listen to over the air on many of these stations, Richland Center, Oshkosh, Hayward. Also down Racine, Kenosha on the Brewers Radio Network. Second game, they had a rainout earlier in the season, so it's a doubleheader today. Second game later on this evening on many of these fine stations as well. Brewers 3, Cubs nothing in the top of the 8th. Right now, I want to turn our attention to another environmental issue. It's a theme here on the show today, conservation, environmental issues. We have at our desk once again here in studio, the world headquarters in Madison, Evan Feinauer, who is the staff attorney of Clean Wisconsin. Evan, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
I'm great. It's great to be here, and I'm glad to get Brewers updates just mixed in. This is great.
Are you a Brewers fan?
I am. I was watching the score before I came here, so
it was crazy.
It was good. This
run they've had. Unfortunately, they, you know, all good things have to come to an end, but an exciting weekend series.
Of course.
Yeah. We're not here just to talk to sports. There are other things that we're interested in here on the show as well. Conservation, and this is one of the things I love talking about because, to me, as somebody who grew up in Southwest Wisconsin and traveled all over the state, it's one of these things that should bind us together across party lines, ideally, because it doesn't matter whether you're a hunter or a bird watcher or a hiker or a kayaker. If we don't have a good environment in which to do all these things, we're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, it's the quintessential thing that you don't miss until it's gone.
Yeah, 100%. Before we get into this, we always like to have people tell us a little bit about themselves. Evan, you are no exception. So where did you grow up and how did you get into conservation and the law?
Well, I am from Wisconsin, hence being a Brewers fan. I grew up in Amarillo, Wisconsin.
Oh, nice.
So East Central, just a little bit west of Oshkosh, for those not familiar. Grew up in the countryside, where unbeknownst to me, I was being raised to care a lot about the environment by my dad and my grandpa and other people that cared about birding and trees and natural prairie and all these things, wildflowers, native plants, all this stuff. So I come by it naturally. And then as I got older, I went to college here in Madison, went to UW, and then went on to law school in Chicago. Was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I knew I never wanted to work at a law firm. I wanted to do some kind of public interest law, and I started working in the environmental clinic at the University of Chicago Law School. Fell in love with that and just loved the work, loved the people that are in this fight, and I've been doing it ever since.
Really cool. So what led you to Clean Wisconsin then?
Yeah, so right out of law school, I had a fellowship. I worked at the Natural Resources Defense Council in Chicago doing work related to the Flint lead in water crisis. After that, when my fellowship ended, a job opened up, very lucky for me, here in Madison at Clean Wisconsin in the staff attorney position. I applied. I've been working there since January 2017. So it's a little bit over 8 years now, I guess.
For folks that might not be familiar across the state, we're a statewide program. Tell us a little bit about Clean Wisconsin, the organization, what your key work is.
Yeah, so Clean Wisconsin has been around since 1970. It was perhaps ambitiously entitled Wisconsin's Environmental Decade originally.
I remember that.
So, yeah. So
I'm old enough to remember that. Yeah.
So I think that there was an idea that 10 years was all it would take, which was not the case. And then it was renamed, rebranded, whatever you want to call it, Clean Wisconsin, at some point, I think, in the early aughts. And we are a statewide organization. We have members across the state. We have scientists on staff. We have lawyers on staff like myself. We have lobbyists, subject matter experts in water, air pollution, everything. So we try to be effective by being in the courts like I do sometimes, but also up at the Capitol, working with state agencies to pass good rules, do outreach to local communities. We really try to be kind of full spectrum, do all the things, touch all the people across the state on environmental issues.
We're speaking with Evan Feinhauer, who is the staff attorney at Clean Wisconsin. Evan, talk to us about this issue called Line 5 Pipeline. I think it's kind of ambiguous, and people are like, what the heck is that? Talk to us a little bit about what Line 5 Pipeline is and why Wisconsinites should be concerned about it.
Yeah, so the Line 5 pipeline has been around since the 1950s. It goes through northern Wisconsin. It starts west of that in Minnesota, cuts across northern Wisconsin, goes through the UP, down into Michigan, lower Michigan, and then into Canada. And this is a pipeline section that is primarily intended and does carry oils from Canada through the United States and back into Canada. Some of it gets let off at facilities in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, some in Michigan, and then most of it ends up in Canada. The line is currently owned by Enbridge, which is a Canadian transnational corporation. They aren't the ones who originally built it, but they own it and operate it now. What's happened is a number of years ago, the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa did not want to renew easements to have the existing line go across their reservation for environmental reasons and concerns that they had that the line might fail, causing a rupture and other ecological impacts. So they said, we're not going to renew the easements. That resulted in a bunch of federal litigation and federal court, actually very close to where we're sitting right now in the Western District, ordered the Enbridge to get off their land by sometime next year in 2026. So Enbridge then initiated a plan to build what's called the reroute. So now you can imagine it's sort of like a U shape that goes down and underneath the reservation and connects with the rest of the existing Line 5. So this was seen as, I think by Enbridge, as a solution to the problem of going around the band's property. But from their perspective, it's not, because it's still in the watershed. If there's an oil spill, it'll still completely wipe out the ecosystem where they live. And it's also going to mean a 41-mile stretch of new pipeline through major sections of northern Wisconsin, which are untouched, undeveloped, and relatively pristine from an environmental perspective.
One of the things that I was very fortunate, my time working at the Capitol for former Senator Dale Schultz, was he was the a co-chair for a while of the Tribal State Relations Board, had a lot of chances to have meetings on tribes, lands, and get to listen and understand their concerns. One of the things, and talk to us a little bit about this in terms of Line 5, one of the things I learned, particularly when on mining issues back at that time, that many of these lands that you're talking about, you mentioned the watershed. And I think some people are going to say, well, okay, fine, the pipes going around that. What's the big deal? These tribal lands, these waters are essentially their churches, their temples. These are religious purposes, these rice fields that have very sacred meaning to them. And so I would encourage Wisconsinites to say, hey, if a company said, we want to build a pipeline through your church, how would you feel? Is that an overreaction to that?
I don't think so. I am, like you, somebody who's had to do a lot of self-education on this. Mm-hmm. I was just up in the reservation last week meeting with attorneys representing the Bad River Band, and I got a chance to go to, they have a cultural museum there mm-hmm. on the reservation, and it was, really interesting. I learned a lot, but it's also very moving to see these portraits of their life ways and their customs that go back decades and generations. And those include things like harvesting wild rice from these wild rice beds that are really the most precious and some pretty rare in the Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. They're the biggest. They're very proud of them, I think, with good reason. And I think that that's something that we should all be sensitive to for cultural reasons, as you mentioned. And it also just points to the tie-in between how we live our lives and the quality of the environment. The pipeline that they want to build, the new section would be sort of upriver, if you will, of the reservation. So if there were a spill or if there was release of sediment or anything from construction or any kind of water quality impact, it would mm-hmm. proceed down gradient. And there are wetlands of national and international significance. They're what's called Ramsar wetlands, the Kakugan sloughs. These are really precious resources that would be directly at risk if anything went wrong.
I think it's a great way to explain it. And again, I would encourage Wisconsinites to put it, think of your favorite fishing spot or your favorite hunting spot. And if that were put in danger, how would you feel about this, let alone the cultural and religious aspects for it? Again, we're talking with Evan Feinhauer, the staff attorney at Clean Wisconsin, on this Line 5 pipeline that's being proposed, a reroute in northern Wisconsin. What do you say to folks that are like, well, this is the old NIMBY, not in my backyard, this, that we have to have energy, even if you're a pro, alternative energy person, we're not there yet, we need oil. Where do you put it if not here? What's your response to that type of reaction?
Yeah, I have a couple different responses. So first is the way our law is written is intended to protect our resources from development, kind of no matter what the development is. So if you're in the state of Wisconsin and you want to fill in or impact a wetlands or cross a stream or a river, you got to get certain permits from the Department of Natural Resources. And the way our law is written, thankfully, it doesn't say, well, you can only get a permit of X, Y, and Z unless you want to build an oil pipeline, in which case right. You have an exemption. It doesn't say that. And so to some extent, the first thing I want to say is, great, if Enbridge wants to do this, they can, but they have to meet the same standards as everybody else. And those standards want to make sure that when you're done with your project, the water resources are in no worse condition. And there's some verbiage around this that the lawyers will use, wetland functional values and these things. But we just don't think they've met that standard. We think DNR made a mistake by issuing the permits. And I think it's important because I don't think we want a standard that slides up and down based on how socially important or economically important we think the development is. Mm. And if we want them, then the legislature has to pass a law that says that. And they haven't done that. So to me, it's kind of just like, that's not what the law is. The other piece of it, though, I think what you're getting at is with this point about, we're not there yet, we still use oil and gas. I think that one of Enbridge's things that they're very clearly keen on is they want to make it seem like we have to build this pipeline reroute. Otherwise, everything will grind to a halt. Mm-hmm. And I think many of their statements in that regard are overstated. And, I'm not an oil man. As I mentioned, I grew up in East Central Wisconsin, which is low on oil. But just reading the record and the other experts, there's sort of been a bunch of competing experts who have weighed in on this over the years. And there seems to be a legitimate question about what would be the economic impacts. Would there be other ways of getting the oil to market? To me, it's a little bit besides the point for the purpose of the question is, should Wisconsin bear the risk and the ecological damage that this company can stick a pipeline through our state?
Couple of quick follow-up questions here before the break. We'll come back and finish it up after that. But am I correct in saying that the oil, the product that flows through this pipeline, none of that stops in Wisconsin? At least there's no direct, people aren't, that stuff isn't going from there into gas stations in Oconomowoc or Oshkosh.
No, what most of the way that these products would end up in Wisconsin markets is in the form of propane. But it's a relatively modest mix of the state's propane sources.
So it's kind of asking, is it overstated to say that Wisconsin being asked to take the risk in our resources for very little return directly to people that might consume things?
I think that's fair. And I would say, I think that's generally true of all of these things that are fossil fuel pains that we feel to get no benefit, because we don't have coal in Wisconsin, we don't have oil, we don't have gas. And so whenever there's things that we're suffering because of fossil fuels, we're not just suffering health and environmental impacts, we're also sending money outside of our state's borders.
You mentioned that the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources already approved some of these things. My question was this under a DNR secretary and administration of Governor Evers or Governor Walker?
Well, this just happened. This happened in December of last year. So this was when Evers was the governor. And yes, they issued the permits late last year after a pretty long process of looking at it, because they did something called an environmental impact statement. They issued the permits, and then my group and others filed the lawsuits.
I find that very, very interesting, because I think the stereotype out there is, oh, well, Democrats would never approve something like this and let it go through. Here you have a Democratic administration, Tony Evers, and you know, as people at Clean Wisconsin, have you guys, is there a money looking at who's making it? Well, the music's coming up. We'll wait. We'll get the answer. That's what they call a tease, ladies and gentlemen. We'll find out from our guest here at the table, Evan Feinhauer, staff attorney for Clean Wisconsin. Always follow the money. That's what I learned when I worked up the street at the building. Come on back. We'll find out the answer to that and more. It's the Todd Allball Show across Wisconsin. Brewers up 7-0 in the 8th in Chicago. Come on back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, where it is now 8 minutes before the hour of 4 o'clock. At the top of the hour, ABC or CBS News, depending upon which of our great stations you're listening to. A check of weather. Rain continues for parts of Wisconsin into the evening. And then our great sports reporter, Mike Clemens, in with a sports report. We'll do one of our own right now, Zommers. Can tell you it's the top of the ninth, and the Brewers are up 7-0. Over the Chicago Cubs in game one of a doubleheader. You can hear the second game a little bit later this evening. Starts with a 6:30 pregame show. 7 o'clock or thereafter, the first pitch as the Brewers take on the Cubs in the second of a doubleheader. You can hear it on RCE in Richland Center, ISS in Oshkosh, RJN, Racine Kenosha, CQM in Beautiful Park Falls, our newest Brewers affiliate. The Buzz of the North, WBZH in Hayward, Wisconsin. We'll continue to monitor that. Sitting here at the table, the world headquarters in downtown Madison with a fellow Brewer fan. He is Evan Feinhauer, the staff attorney at Clean Wisconsin. Good news, Evan, for the Brewers.
Of course. I'm excited.
That's good news. Not so good news if we're concerned about Wisconsin's environment. We're talking about this Line 5 pipeline. Really interesting work at Clean Wisconsin. I appreciate you coming on the show. I wanted to follow up on this question I started beforehand, and I think it's important for listeners and viewers to understand this was approved by the DNR recently under the Tony Evers administration. I think a lot of people think, well, how could that happen? As someone who spent a lot of time in politics, I learned to follow the money. Have you at Clean Wisconsin done this? Is there been a lot of money from these interests in the industry to the Evers campaign or Evers administration?
So the thing that's interesting is I think people think that somebody in my job as an environmental lawyer would be focused on those kind of issues. But the answer, I think, is a lot more boring in terms of what my work looks like, which is I focus on what the statutes say and all the information the agency's given, and it's way nerdier than that. And I think it would be in some ways fun if we had some fun, theory about money changing hands. But I think really what this is about is they apply for these permits and it puts the department in a tough spot. I don't think they want to say no. I think that's true no matter who's in charge. Mm-hmm. And so I think what they do is they try to be really diligent and do their best under tough circumstances and with limited resources. And they don't always get there. And then I think they really want to get to yes, even if maybe they feel like they should say no. And this was one of the times when they should have said no. And I think they said yes. And what they often do is they'll say, here's your permit, and we've loaded it up with conditions that make it clear that you can't harm the environment from our point of view. And then you look at the conditions and you're like, this looks more like it's DNR feeling good about the product it put out than necessarily always protecting the environment. Sometimes the conditions are great and there's no problem. But this was a situation where I think what happened is they were trying to get to yes. They're going to load it up with these conditions. And then hope that kind of cross their fingers and hope nothing goes wrong. And then that way they can say, we let the development proceed and we protected the environment. We have our cake, we eat it too. The problem as an environmentalist is there's just things that sometimes should be no's. Mm-hmm. They should be denials. Everything can't be a yes, but sometimes right. the answer just needs to be no. And so I think the simpler, less interesting answer is that I think these agencies have a lot of inertia to get to yes because they don't want to be in the way of infrastructure that's deemed important by the person who wants to make a bunch of money by building the infrastructure.
Let's get to the lawsuit itself that you're a part of here. And let's talk a little bit about the value of water resources, which I think during the break you said is really the crux of this, mm-hmm. of what you're fighting on.
Yeah, so it's important to emphasize that this challenge is a challenge to permits to impact water resources, wetlands and waterways in particular. And one of the things that's awesome about Wisconsin is that we require you to get a permit anytime you're going to impact a wetland, with some exceptions. But here, you have to meet strong standards because we've come to understand how valuable wetlands are in terms of reducing the severity of floods, providing habitat, keeping our water clean, making sure the surface to groundwater flow is normal in the way it's supposed to be. And it sets a pretty high bar. And here, that's super relevant because we're not talking about, you know, a puddle in a degraded farm field somewhere that's been super developed. We're talking about northern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about places where you go out there and you look and there's not a single invasive species. And it looks like, I mean, it's hard to even get to some of these places on foot, you know. You got to trudge through a bunch of wilderness with waders on and you got to wear mosquito nets because the bugs, yeah. I mean, it's these are places that haven't been touched by man. Yeah. And so it's important to emphasize we got not that many of these places left. And we should be really, really protective of the ones we have and hold everybody to a super high bar if they're going to come in and dredge and blast and tunnel through these places.
I agree. It's such an important point that once these places like this are gone, you're never going to get them back. It's just, it's, or at least very, very difficult in a generation.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that the parties are disagreeing about. You know, that's one of, that's our position is you're going to impact these places and you're not going to be able to put them back together again. And Enbridge says, no, we have a plan. We'll come in here, we'll tear it all up, but then Humpty Dumpty will go back together again and we'll be okay. And we're skeptical that that's the case. And that's a big dispute in the case.
Assuming it's cleanwisconsin.org, yes. cleanwisconsin.org. Really important. People can still have time to put public testimony in right now, continuing through October, I see. And people can email in or they have to show up, or how do they get involved?
Well, unfortunately, if you wanted to testify, the deadline for that actually would have been last week. So,
oh, it doesn't continue into October? All right.
No, we still have a live testimony component in October, but the judge set a requirement that folks had to show up on through the link last week and do Got that. It. So that's been closed, okay. unfortunately.
So
we gave you bad information.
No, I wouldn't say that. I can't read very well. But people can, if they wanted to, go to cleanwisconsin.org and make a donation to the cause.
Well, I would never say no to that.
And stay informed, because I think, you know, people explaining things in real terms like you've done today, I really appreciate that. The more we understand what's going on, the more we can build coalitions to preserve Wisconsin's resources, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much, Evan Feinhauer, the staff attorney at Clean Wisconsin. Thanks for coming in today. Thanks for all the great work you're doing, and go crew.
Yeah, it was great to be here. Thanks.
That's all for this week's Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show. As always, if you want to hear the rest of the week's shows, you can go to civicmedia.us/shows or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And as Todd always says, whatever you believe in, whatever you're fighting for, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. We'll see you on Monday.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.